the biggest tabletop gaming convention held in the USA, heralded as the best 4 days of gaming. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Gen Con. Episode 2, The Panel. Alright, my goal in this is to not talk much at all, to get you guys directly to the content. You might hear a few more ums, ahs, and long pauses in this because I'm not editing a second of this audio. I want you guys to experience everything that we did in the panel because these guys nailed it. I will introduce to you the guys that are going to be involved with this. You have Chris Odie from Zombie Orpheus Entertainment. They make amazing video projects. You might know them from The Gamers, and last year we talked about them for the Dark Dungeons video. This year they're promoting a video called Attacking the Darkness, kind of a behind the scenes, but they want me to specify very much that it is not about behind the scenes of Dark Dungeons. They want to be very clear about that. So it's a new movie that's going to be coming out. They want to bring it out to all the film festivals and all that sort of thing, but while they didn't release it, they did preview it at Gen Con, and he's going to mention that in the panel itself. We also invited Kyle Rudge to come and talk with us. He is kind of the brains behind an organization called Geekdom House. It's a website that just provides amazing content, both visually and with just fantastic writing as well. Talking about just nerd culture and geek stuff and gaming and all that stuff all kind of brought in together. This panel is about faith and media. And guys, you're going to love every second of it. Derek does an amazing job of moderating. The guys are on point. So I'm just going to shut up and let you guys listen to this amazing panel. And I will see you guys later.
Welcome, 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 welcome. We're glad to have you here this year for 2015 Gen Con. This is the Faith and Gaming panel. If you were looking for Knights and Satan service, that's down the hall to the right, three doors. Oh, wait, that was KISS in the 1970s. We may have a few KISS fans here. This year, we did something a little bit different. We wanted to change things up. So in doing something different, you always invite someone back. And so this year, I wanted to really have us talk about geeks, faith, film, and media. My friend Chris Odie here works with this interesting group. They're called Zoe, or as you may know them, Zombie Orpheus Entertainment. They have put out movies such as Darkness Rising, or they released last year Dark Dungeons, and Chris talked a little bit about that. Chris is also a pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America.
In America.
That's right. That's right. That's the
of America, our heretics.
Yeah.
In America. We kicked them out a long time ago.
Glad to have Chris here with us this year. Have him come back. He's going to talk to us about some of the interesting things he gets to do, and I get to ask him fun questions. I didn't get to ask him questions last year.
I forgot you were going to do that.
Yeah, you forgot I was asking the questions this year. And then another guy is named Kyle Rudge. Now, it's interesting how I met Kyle. I put "met" in quotes because I like to search the internet for geeky sermons and things like that. If you don't know me, my name's Derek White. Some people know me as the geek preacher, so it's very obvious why I search the internet for geeky sermons. And I came across an Episcopal or an Anglican church, Anglican church in Canada that had this gentleman speaking, and I was like, man, this is some really good stuff. And I think I sent you an email or something like that, and then I discovered he's not really a nice person. No, I'm kidding. He really is a really nice guy. We began to talk about some of the ministry work he does. He works with a ministry called Geekdom House. They do a lot of online blogs, things of that nature, do a lot of commentary on faith and film and things of that nature. And it's really well written, looks really good, and I've really enjoyed all of that they put out. But the thing that really interested me, Kyle, was when we talked the first time, and he talked about a choir that they took to a comic convention, and they began to sing songs like the theme song to Serenity.
Oh, yeah.
And they went around the convention just singing as a choir geeky theme songs. And I thought, what a wonderful thing. But what impressed me the most about this gentleman was to hear him say this. When people asked us why we are doing this, we simply told them, let me see if I get this right, we simply told them, we're here to bring this gift to you. And I thought to myself, that is the essence of Christian ministry. We are bringing a gift to the world. And I said, well, Kyle, man, if you're ever in Indianapolis for Gen Con, I will do everything in my power to make sure you're on the panel. And then suddenly I got this message.
I booked my flight.
Hey, I booked my flight. So I want to introduce you, and please give them a round of applause, Chris Oatey and Kyle Rush. So I get to ask good questions this year. So the first question for both of you guys is pretty simple and straightforward. How did you get involved in this type of thing that you're doing? Kyle, how did you get involved with Geekdom House?
It was just something that my wife and I, we'd go to various small groups, and we enjoyed it. We were part of a group for 10-plus years. We would do like small group Bible studies, but we always kind of felt like it was a sermon, and then we'd answer yes or no questions to. Like, we kind of want something deeper. And we realized very quickly that when we watched shows like Firefly, Doctor Who, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, all these types of shows we would watch, we would have deep, meaningful theological discussions about the things that we experienced. And so we stepped out on a limb and said, well, what if we were to make a small group that did that? And that's kind of how it all started, and just tried to find like-minded people that were interested in talking about their faith, maybe some existential stuff, as it pertains to these modern-day parables that are written. And that's kind of what started the journey of really expanding into this idea of geek ministry, or whatever you want to call it.
That's wonderful, wonderful. Now, Chris, how did you get, we've talked about this a little bit, but how did you, if you'd share with everybody, how you met up and began working with Zombie Orpheus?
Yeah, well, Zombie Orpheus Entertainment is kind of a sister company to a group known as Dead Gentleman Productions, and actually this year they're sharing a booth together. There's a lot of crossover between the two, but they are two separate groups. Many of the people who were originally involved in the founding of Dead Gentleman all met in college together. We all went to Pacific Lutheran University out in Tacoma, Washington, and many of the group started living in the same dorm together, met then, overlapped year-wise, and they started gaming together. I did not. I thought they were giant geeks. I remember very distinctly, actually, watching them film their first movie from a window, and Demon Hunters was the first movie they did. Yeah. And I remember watching them film one of the climatic fight scenes, and actually, I remember this thought for some reason very distinctly, mainly because it was so weird to see this guy dressed up in makeup doing all this stuff. You know, in the middle of this campus. Wow, what a bunch of geeks. I'm so glad I don't hang out with them. I was standing in the dorm room of the girl I was dating at the time, and within 2 years of that point, she and I had broken up. I had moved in with one of the Dead Gentleman types, Don Early, and was involved in an improv group with them and started working on the films with them. And it's kind of a funny group because really, I don't know if any of you know anything about any of the movies that we've done or anything like that, but a large percentage of the people who are involved in those groups, partially because PLU is associated with the Lutheran Church, a lot of them are pastors' kids.
Oh, my Lord. God, yeah. Have mercy on their souls.
You know, like, I...
Just PKs. Ask my daughter.
It's actually a little creepy at times. You know, but Nathan Rice, if you know that name, he played Lodge in the Gamers series. He's a PK. Matt Shimkus, who played Rogar the Barbarian in the very original The Gamers and who shows up in Journey Quest, he's a PK. Steve Wolbrecht, who did all the music for all the things and who shows up in various, he's a PK. Ben Dobbins is actually a church musician. In fact, he's my church musician. He commutes down, and you know, we work together now every Sunday.
Ben's a great guy.
He is. Matt Vansel's dad was mother, I think it was a church musician, the writer-director. And so really early on, a lot of the work that we did also was kind of, I don't know, elements of that background crept in to a lot of early stuff. It wasn't obvious, but yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's really interesting. I mean, you know, you wonder if being a preacher's kid either messed you up so bad that you had to do films like that, or maybe they had really good pastors as parents and opened their mind up to doing something different. So, Kyle, what is the next thing you've got on your agenda? What's coming up? What type of interesting things do you have planned ahead?
Well, we have so many different things, but for us, like, the direction has always been about art. We love art in all its forms, and we kind of are operating off the principle that, you know, like, you rewind the clock years and years ago, the church were pretty much the pioneers of art, right? We can talk about things like the Sistine Chapel, we can talk about dramatic arts, we can talk about so many different things, and how the church was the pioneer, and it was the world that was coming up behind and just trying to make it all, you know, dirty and mess it up. And, well, somewhere along the line, now it's the world that's leading in the art, and the church is just trying to clean everything up. And so we operate on the principle that we want to be pioneers. We don't want to bring something to the table that the world's already done and then just make it Christian. Instead, we want to be pioneers again. We want to tap into that creative source that we believe exists and bring something new to the table and something that is excellent. And so we are doing the Wandering Minstrels again, which we go to Comic-Cons as a big choir. We prep for about 3 months, pick a whole bunch of different songs. We're super excited about going back. We've got services starting at the end of August. And so what we're doing is we're meeting in a cafe, and people come. And we have kind of like a panel of three, and there's a facilitator that will help the discussion along after you've watched an episode of, you know, whatever we decided at that time. And then the discussion happens, and we kind of break it down. We go through, it's almost like a Bible study, and that's kind of like our church service. The idea is that for all the geeks in our city, sometimes when you go to church, you don't always feel like you're spoken to, or if you are spoken to in a geek context, it's usually condemning. And so we want to say, no, look, like, don't leave your church. Like, go there and serve. But if you need a place to heal, you need a place of refuge, place of sanctuary, come to Geekdom House once a month. Come to our service. I think you'll really appreciate it, and you'll grow. We've got that coming on, and we've got our magazine. So basically what we have, we call it Area of Effect, simply because we want to have an area of effect. And we've had one published copy, and so what we've done is we've recruited writers from around the world that are so interested in contributing to the project. With geeks, I mean, all of you guys know, like, we're super passionate people. When we start talking about something we love, we get really excited. And so we found people that were not only passionate, but had a lot of experience in writing, in art, in layout, and various other things. So we created this thing. So we post online, and we also have a printed version. And we're just finishing up our second issue, going into our third. And we launched a Kickstarter to help that, so that we can start paying the artists and the writers, so that, you know, work is worth the wage. And we want to make sure that they're fairly compensated. So. Those are the three major initiatives. I got long-term goals and dreams that I'd love to do, but those are the ones that are right in front of us.
I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. You made me think of something when you said that, and I'm going to throw this question to Chris, who might get mad at me for this one. But, you know, as a pastor, I've seen this, and I know you've seen this. We go to school, we go to seminary, we get all this training and learning. We're shown some of the great art of history. And some of the things I've come across is that some of the best art is dirty. Now, I don't mean filthy. I mean dirty. I mean it's crude. It's rough around the edges. Why do you think we in the church so often don't like our art rough? We want everything neat and nice. We don't like the chaotic lines. Why do you think that might be?
That's a really good question.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. So the next thing that we're working on.
Quick
roll for a saving throw. Crap.
Man, roll one. The area of effect question may come to you next.
Well, I never have good reflex saves, so I'm
did improv.
Honestly, I think part of what you're saying there isn't just... I do think you're right that it is partially a church thing, but I think there's also... I think human beings, we are oftentimes uncomfortable with ambivalence or with gray. You know, just not. And I don't think it's just a church thing. I think we frequently want things to be black or white or somehow discreet. And we become, I don't know, frustrated or something when there is when there's messiness, when there is when things are not clear. Mm. It's because it's simpler in some ways. You know, it's kind of like when you're playing a game, for example. You know, if the rules are clear, it makes it very easy, and you don't have to think that much about how you're doing it. But if the rules are complex, and you have to kind of, you know, you have that resident rules lawyer at the table, for example, and you're trying to hash out exactly what something's intention is, you know, that's, life is much more like that. And I think, that, you know, your question, I know, is specifically about the art and about the church, but I think that's where his roots are. It's just this kind of nature we have as human beings to want to, not just to simplify things, but also to control things. You know, there is something very attractive about being able to feel in control. And being able to feel like I'm about to go off on a pastoral tangent, I'll stop.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. I'll do that for you. To be in control is mm-hmm. is a lot of times the nature of sin. You know,
well, and you know. What the heck? I'll say it. I mean, that's something I've always kind of thought too. Is that there's this tendency in talking with folks who, so I minister in the Seattle, Washington area. So, you know, in some ways, I'm outnumbered. You know, it's a very unchurched part of the country, or it might even be more accurate to say de-churched in some ways. There's a lot of resentment, and it's a very, yeah, I mean, it can be very bitter, it can be very jaded against organized religion. You know, you frequently hear the, you know, I'm spiritual but I'm not religious. It's a very frequent phrase, and I can't help but think that even when it comes to some of the choices we make as people that are not in our best interests or in a community's best interest, there's something very attractive about being able to feel like when I mess up, you know, if this somehow has ticked off God and things are going to get bad down the road or whatever, at least it was my choice. I was in charge. I made the decision. You know, God's not the one that's... God's not in charge. I made the decision. It was me. I'm the one who can do it. You follow me? Like, there's something almost seductive about being able to just say, whatever, you know. But at least I was the one who made the call.
That's right.
And, you know, back to your art thing, though, since it was the original question, and I want you to deal with it, too. No. but there's also been a tendency in the church to, at times, pride that same structure over the gospel itself.
Mm.
You know, I am part of a church that'll be celebrating 500 years of, you know, existence.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, you know, Lutheran Protestant ministry in a couple of years.
Right?
October 31st, 1517. That's our Wi-Fi password at the church. I don't care. You can know it. It's all good. But you know, looking not just at the Lutherans, but just all over the place, there is that tendency. But again, it's not just a church thing. It's an institutional, structural thing. As you become complacent, as you become entrenched, that's what it is, entrenched. You start valuing the structure over the reason you got together in the first place. You know, and you could say that about even gaming, too.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
Flip it back on gaming groups. I mean, I'm sure you've had that experience where, and I hate to say it, but where a gaming group maybe just doesn't work anymore. But it's the old pattern. And you're trying to keep that pattern because that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to look this way. Even though everyone at the table is like, I really don't like playing with these people anymore. There are other folks I'd rather be playing with right now. I know. That's my ramble.
No, that's really good. And I think you've nailed it there. And in fact, we're going to play off of that for Kyle here. Get the good question. You get a good question off of that because you made me really think about that in terms of the geek community. You know, sometimes structure is destroying us.
Mm-hmm.
We're over-structuralizing. I hear this a lot of times from the old school gamers. I have friends in the old school gaming community, and a lot of times they will look at some of the new versions of a role-playing game and they'll say, there's too much structure. There's no room for imagination. So, Kyle, how can we as Christians, who are often not known for our imagination, how can we help make room for people's imagination?
odd. I mean, trust, right? The whole idea of...
Oh, that's good.
We're talking about, like, even mm-hmm. control. I mean, I recognize there is a place for a lot of the, I would say, Christian art that exists, right? Like the, you know, if we want to talk like the Stephen Kendrick films or those types of things, like there's a place for those to exist. But at the same time, do we have to beat people over the head with things? Not always.
You don't want Nicolas Cage films?
No. Make a Christian version of Ghost Rider, please. I think there is a film called The Black Rider, but no, that whole...
I think you got Chris on that one.
You broke me with that.
He broke me.
No, but that whole idea, like, do we actually trust that the people are going to get the message? And we want to control so much of that. We want to say, no, by the way, I need to explain explicitly that this guy here is Jesus, mm-hmm. and he died for you, by the way. You know, the whole everything. You didn't need to know that, because I'm going to explain it to you completely with mass exposition, because we don't trust that the Holy Spirit, if we truly believe that, would actually deliver that message. Can we not just rest in our creativity and allow our imagination to get there and trust that God will do the rest? And I think at some point in time, like, if we keep doing the, okay, I'm going to just beat you over the head with it, we start to think that we're responsible. Like, I'm not responsible for converting anybody. Right. Doesn't matter what I say or what I do, the conviction comes from the Holy Spirit, and we need to trust that. And if we trust that, I think that allows our imagination. Mm-hmm. We start to remove some of our structure, and our imagination and creativity can come through.
Y'all don't want to... Yes, please! I'm not going to pick on you as much now. That was excellent. That was excellent. And I'm going to trust that your message got across and not try and elaborate on it. Now I told Chris I was going to leave to do this because I'm curious. What do you guys at Zombie Orpheus have coming up? And can you talk about Attack of the Darkness?
Oh, yeah, absolutely can now.
All right.
You know, last night, so I don't know if some of you might have seen it or not. Last night we had the preview of a new film that we've recently been working on called Attacking the Darkness. And it is a film about the making of an anti-RPG movie. Yeah, that's the way to put it.
Mazes and Monsters.
Well, it's a mockumentary. And and so the idea of the film is that this this couple has decided to spend time and energy in making this movie about the dangers of RPGs and how, you know, you will be summoning demons who will possess your soul, and, you know, the whole, I mean candidly, very similar in some ways to some of the stuff you might read in a, you know, like Dark Dungeons type thing, which the film is not based on. It's not based on that. It is not based on that. Can I just make that very clear legally that it is not based on that at all? It really isn't. But that idea...
So it's based off a Dark Dungeon.
Oh! Kyle came to try and break me. And he broke you. Area of effect.
But we did shoot the two films sequentially. Simultaneously, I should say. While we were last year, some folks saw that we premiered Dark Dungeons based on the original Jack Chick tract, which we'd gotten the rights to do for free, and as long as we did it straight by the book, you know, by the tract, as it were, and that was worth a giggle. Come on, by the tract, that was thanks.
Was it attractive?
There we go. But while we shot that, we also shot this Attacking the Darkness, and so we were able to make use of the sets and the actors from Dark Dungeons for this other film, and the response last night was fantastic. You know, it was really solid. People really loved it. Actually, with several people come up to us afterwards and say, that was the funniest thing you guys have ever done.
Oh, wow.
And which meant a lot.
Was it supposed to be funny?
It was.
Okay,
which
good.
Was, exactly. It was actually supposed to be very dramatic and sad, but that's okay. But it does also, it's a movie that also has a lot of heart. And part of the idea behind it is looking at some of the abuses you see in certain forms of organized religion. And in many ways, comparing it to some of the abuses that some of our folk have experienced working in independent film.
where, you know, sometimes people get so wrapped up in wrapped up in the task at hand that they forget about the humanity of the people involved in that task. And so, you know, so it was, it went really well. And I guess, you know, as far as what we have next, that's probably the biggest thing right now is finishing that up, and then putting it on the festival circuit and seeing, you know, where it gains traction. You know, based on last night's response, we're feeling really good about it.
That's awesome.
You know, there's other projects going on. We've got, you know, we've unrelated to, you know, candidly, well, sometimes related, sometimes unrelated to faith stuff. You know, we have our improv troupe. We have several short sketch works that have been going on and things like that. And, no, I can't, never mind. Yeah, so that, those are some of the things that we have.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So, Kyle, this question, I'm going to throw it both to you guys and, as well. What is the greatest difficulty you face in doing the type of work you do?
Well, I mean, even recently, we had an opportunity to take to get some space for filming, for audio. It was another Christian ministry. They do some really cool work. And they were excited, and they're like, okay, you know, we'll charge you $300 a month. We're like, we don't have any money. And I said, how about this? You know, we can make you a website. We charge this much, so it'll probably equal more to the year's rent. We'll just do a straight-up trade. Like, sounds great. We'll take it to the board. And a month later, they're like, we're going to say no, and you can't rent from us. You're not welcome here. And it was for two reasons. One, we had written an article about Harry Potter, in which it says, if you treat magic as a plot device, here's the things that you can learn. And it was like, well, magic is bad, therefore this is bad. And the second was video games. We talked about video games, and video games lead people to sin. And so they didn't want to be seen as leading others to sin. And so they even cited two articles in the email. And like I wanted to respect that. And so I read the articles. And the articles were very clearly, like, the titles were like, okay, video games and faith, do these really work? And then the first paragraph would be like, here are the, you know, usual things that people would say. And the first one was 8 pages, the second one was 14 pages. I read all of that, and all of them, every page was all about how video games actually goes really well with faith. But they took the title and the opening paragraph to reinforce the argument without actually reading through the entire thing. And so when you say, like, what is the biggest challenge, I think that's what it is I think that there's a native bias against some of the things that we want to go into, and they're just quickly looking for the first thing to say, well, this is going to support my argument, so I'm going to use that, and then walk away from the table because they don't want to touch that. And so we've experienced that a few times. That's not the only time, but I think that's our biggest obstacle. It's just those, this is evil, I don't know why, but I know it is, and therefore it is, and unwilling to open that conversation ever again. No, I was like, because what would I accomplish, right? And so I just sat back. I was like, well, thank you for taking the time to think about this and pray about this. And yeah, and then I just left. And we ended up getting office space the next week from somebody else, and it's beautiful and gorgeous. But
isn't that the biggest Christian cop out we do, though? Let me pray about it. You hear that? Let me pray about it. You know, so yeah. What do you think your biggest difficulty is, Chris?
In relation to, like, Zoe and film and such,
or just that you face as, well, let me make it more specific to your situation. As a pastor, you're a full-time pastor, right?
Correct.
As a full-time pastor, you're married,
yep.
Have children,
yep.
And you're working with Zoe and
managing the improv troupe, managing the booth this year.
Yeah.
The final
that's
touches
right.
On
they
the
have
film.
You managing the booth.
Uh-huh. I'm an idiot.
Yes, you are. Welcome to the club.
But honestly, time has been one of the biggest ones of late. Within Zoe, or honestly before that with that gentleman, you know, I oftentimes found myself, and frankly find myself, in kind of a unofficial spiritual advisor and or counselor role, not infrequently. And you know, and that's fine, for the most part. But it is definitely, you know, it wears on you sometimes, frankly. You know, because in many ways, the Zoe stuff is my way to get a break from what I do the rest of the time. And so when I find myself doing a lot of what I do the rest of the time in my break time, then I have to find a new break, which ironically is often video games.
I have to say that I sympathize with you very, very much there. That's why I asked the question. I needed help.
Yeah.
Because I started doing this 8 years ago, and I was in a similar boat. This was what I did for fun to get away, and now you get the messages and the phone calls from the geek community, from people who are not affiliated with the church at all, and they're wanting your time. And so at least you made me feel a little better knowing I'm not the only one.
No,
out
you're
there.
Not alone.
And you do. That's what I did to get away, and you get burnt out. You don't feel like you have any off time, and especially in a world of social media.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you're saying Christianity doesn't offer easy answers.
It depends on which answers you're looking for.
There we go.
You know, I think the other thing, though, that's difficult, or at least, you know, the things that I've got with our stuff and such, is I oftentimes, and even like in this situation, find myself feeling a bit like a, what's the word I want? I didn't start playing RPGs until after college. Like I learned about them playing games with the Zoe folk, with Dead Gentlemen. I mean, that was my first introduction. I've only been playing D&D for 12 or 13 years. You know, as far as a start for base.
No.
No. But I will school you in Halo, man. Like, but like video games were my thing.
Yeah.
You know, or board games, things like that. I was never into RPGs until later on. But also then, being in the Northwest, being in a more liberal, you know, part of the country, when it comes to that Christian gamer identity, I have very little problem finding acceptance for the gamer part. Mm-hmm. It's the Christian part that becomes more tricky at times, just because of the general, you know, indifference, so to speak. But at other times, I've found that I've really overplayed that in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, last year on the way home from Gen Con, my congregation basically has a new congregant now, who got involved with our church when we met at Gen Con last year. Like, he was at Gamers Live, he enjoyed the show, his friend rolled the 20 at the end of the show, and so we gave him the die, the inflatable die at the end of the show, and then on the flight home, I ended up sitting next to him. And so as I'm walking down the aisle to go sit down, he says, he makes a reference to my character from the improv show. I'm, huh? Oh, yeah, hi. We get to talking, and we finds out that, you know, he'd grown up Lutheran, hadn't been involved with the church for years, lived just a few miles away. You know, I mean, it was the weirdest thing. And so then we, you know, we got to talking and all of that.
And I have a friend and a writer who lives in your part of the country. His name's Leonard Sweet, and Lynn has a phrase he uses. There is no coincidence, only connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really, that's beautiful, bro. That's beautiful. Man, dude, you get me excited hearing that. Thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Wow. So you get to avoid the next question because you just shared it. Next question was, you know, I was going to start off with the tough one. What's the most difficult thing? But what's your greatest joy? I would, you know, is that your greatest joy, Chris?
Professionally or?
You know, in doing this. Yeah, you know, as a pastor. It's hard for me to separate both those worlds.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's your greatest joy working with Zoe?
I love creative collaboration.
Okay. Mm.
That's what I love more than anything. You know, I'm a solo pastor. I was a solo pastor in my first call. My first call, I had a very, 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 very part-time secretary. I mean, she made the bulletins for Sunday, and that was it. My current situation, I have a part-time secretary as well, like just less than half-time. You know, and there's very little opportunities for a lot of collaboration in many situations. But that's the thing that I get to play with all the time with the Zoe stuff. And that sometimes I find ways to do with the church as well. You know, my congregation hosts 4 other churches right now. And used to be 5, but one of them disbanded. Ethiopian, Korean, and Latino. And we've been doing a lot of stuff together. And that's
potlucks,
been,
I hope.
Tell me about it.
Sounds good.
But this is a random side note. One of my favorite things about the 2 Ethiopian pastors at the congregation, I love them dearly. They're very good friends of mine now. But they always talk about how amazingly awesome their Ethiopian coffee is. But they will not drink it without putting sugar and cream and, like, other stuff in it. And I'm like, if your coffee is that great, why are you ruining it? Like, just drink it black, dude. Anyway, whatever. But that kind of opportunity to, like...
You are from the Northwest. Oh, man.
So later on, we'll be talking about microbrews.
Coffee snobs.
But creative collaboration, that's my biggest joy in life. Whether it's whether it's in improv, whether it's in film, whether it's in the church, whatever it is. Just, you know, even planning the booth this year. You know, bouncing ideas off of my wife, Sarah, sitting there, or off of some of the other folks in Zoe, and that kind of interplay, I feed off of that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. What about you, Kyle?
Good. I was hoping to ask.
Yeah.
I'm in my day job where I actually make money, and I can put that in quotation marks because I work for a Christian radio station. I do the morning show, but I love doing it. When I do interviews with people, it doesn't matter who they are, and there's always this moment, and I always try and capture this moment. It usually take about 10 to 20 minute conversation, but there's like 30 seconds of that conversation where you tapped into the thing that they are most passionate about, and it's like everything else in the world stops and they just light up. And I find that everybody has that. You just got to figure out what it is in that person. And I always find that there's something holy in that moment where you're talking to someone. It's almost like creative collaboration, but of letting them just explore and expand on why they love what they love.
Yeah.
And when I get to share in that, and it happens all over. Like, I remember a number of years back, I got to go to Fan Expo out in Toronto, and I had the opportunity to meet with the creative director of Marvel. And like, I'm an okay comics guy. I'm not, like, diehard. But when I talked with him, somebody had asked him the question, like, hey, I want to write for Marvel. What do I need to do? And it was like everything in this guy's world stopped. He was made to answer this question. And he looks at him, and he's like, okay, here's what you need. Marvel isn't about selling comics. Marvel is about telling stories that change people's lives. And I don't care if 1 million people read your comic or 1, but whoever picks up that comic, their life has to be better because they did. That's the stories we want at Marvel. And I'm like, I want to write for Marvel now. Like, you can see his passion just came so through. And when you talk to people, like, and you get to catch that passion and that vision with them, I love those moments. And it's really easy to find that in geeks.
They're
so quick. Like, you want to talk about heart on sleeve? Yeah, that's why I love being in this world, because I just get to a lot of that opportunity.
Wow.
We see that at the booth all the time. Like, when people will come by to talk about, you know, their experiences of this film or that film, and just that exact thing, like just that light that goes on, just that pure joy and you got me, and you care about what I care about, you care about me, and just that idea of being recognized, you know, almost in some ways, just the simple act of, oh, you've recognized that I am a human being, and you have given me respect and attention, and, you know?
The shared humanity. I mean, the shared humanity of it all. Sharing our stories.
Where 2 or more are gathered.
Where 2 or more are gathered. Yes.
See, I always find that, like, if I believe what I believe, and I often use that phrase in everything I'm doing, but in the same way, like, we're all created by God. It doesn't matter if we know or not, I believe what I believe, that is the case. That we all have this fingerprint on the inside of us. And no matter what we do, we can walk through life accepting that and shining that. We can walk through life hiding that, denying that. And we create things based on that, but that fingerprint continues to be there. And I think in those moments, like, God created you to be this person. And when we get to tap into that and you get to share with that person, that is a holy moment. I get to see that fingerprint that God put on you. I love that time.
I call that finding God's story in somebody's life.
Yes, very much so.
I love the opportunity to just listen and see God's story working in a person's life. That is one of the most amazing things. And I've had a conversation with a number of atheist and agnostic friends who will share with me the joy in their life, because we as Christians too often tell people, oh, you can't have any joy without Jesus. Or we do this. It's not real joy. You've just fooled yourself that you're happy. Well, I fooled myself that I'm happy? All right. Well, maybe you're fooled that you're happy. Uh-oh, what do I do now? And so what I find interesting is when my friends who are atheists and agnostics begin to share their story, I begin to see God working through their story. And sometimes I think they begin to see that something beyond themselves is working mm-hmm. through their story. And I think that's great, man. It's really good to hear you guys talking about, because I think that's what you're getting out of your collaborative, your collaboration, is you're getting them to share in your story.
Well, and creating that story and creating that story together too.
Oh,
you know, that's been like, I mean, like this new film, you know, with Attacking the Darkness, really, Ben and Christian and myself have just been kind of, we've each had our own angle, we've each had our own goals with it for the movie, but we've also played really well together about sharing and finding ways to mix and blend those ideas together. And I think the result is actually a much stronger movie, because I think if any one of us mm-hmm. had just tried to do it on our own, we would have been lacking some really crucial elements that the others bring. You know, like, I mean, well, if Ben wasn't involved, we would have lost that whole, like, ability to do the movie part. You know, that would have been kind of crucial. But I mean, seriously, that each one brought a very specific, just different needs for the film, different hopes for it. But they've worked well together, and it's become this, it's been amazing to watch it get formed along the way, especially since there was no script.
So don't split the party.
No. Don't split the party.
It's a terrible idea. Exactly. Keep it together.
So we
can cover more space if we split the party.
I need some DM advice then, some game mastering advice. How do we work well together? How do we work well? What's some good advice for working well with others, creating a story with others? How do we do that? Because, see, I grew up in the 80s. No comments, Kyle. I grew up in the 80s, and some of our earliest games, you know, we just created the story ourselves. The other guys kind of listened and tried to kill every monster we threw at them. That was the story. Yeah. You're in a 10x10 room. There is a red dragon. Kill it. And that's what we did. But then we started getting these things called modules. They call them, what do they call them now? Adventures?
Encounters?
Encounters. And it was a script.
They're not called modules anymore?
They're not, no.
Really?
No, they call them, yeah, it broke my heart. And so we would read these, and, you know, when you're 13 years old, you just follow it the way it says in the book, man. Sounds like a lot of Christians. you just follow it the way it says in the book, and you do not deviate. And that got really stilted. It was no fun. And then as we grew, we tried to do some of the collaborative storytelling. I came along when Vampire came out. I played some Vampire, which was very important with collaborative storytelling. Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed it. Even worse, Victorian Age Vampire was the best rule set, but I'm biased. So my question is, you know, how do we as Christians really, you know, it's not really DM advice, but how do we as Christians learn to work well with others? How do we learn to play well with others, maybe?
No, but it is, you already partially answered it while you were asking that question. I mean, I think, you know, and I know we'll both throw more, you know, stuff on the pile, but I guess I am going first on that one, sorry. When you were talking about the mutual storytelling, like the idea of what's the point when you get down at the table together? You know, is the point to try and hack through the module, Or is the point to enjoy each other's company and create something together? Because to me, that's what it's about. Like, I mean, no disrespect towards anyone else, but when it comes to like Gen Con, I'm never a huge fan of doing the pickup RPG sessions. Mm-hmm. It's just not my bag. If it's yours, that's great. I'm glad you enjoy it. But for me, the collaboration is so crucial to the experience that I prefer to game with people who I kind of know how we're shaping this, not how what we're going to do, but how other people approach it and how, you know, what where the strengths and the weaknesses are, not of the characters but of the people. Mm. You know, that this person is more likely to approach the story from this angle and this one from this angle, and how do we blend that together. You know, in improv, you always talk about saying yes.
And.
You know, and. As opposed to blocking. You know, as opposed to saying no. And if someone has established that reality is A, B, C, don't say, no, 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 reality is G, C, L, or whatever. You know, accept what is given to you and work with it. And I'm not saying that in terms of, I'm not trying to say, well, just, you know, don't worry about your faith and just accept whatever someone tells you. But the idea of being able to respect what someone else brings to the table as also meaningful or valid, mm-hmm. you know, that it isn't, I don't have all the answers. I never will. It's kind of by definition I won't. You know, I'm never going to fully understand Scripture. I can't. I don't think that's possible, personally. And if I did, that would, in some ways, to me, diminish it, because I'm not that great, you know. But just this idea of being able to allow everyone at the table to shine, to have their moments, and to be focused on that, and to be focused on that idea of the ultimate point, which is, you know, being together.
I'm writing down pastoral advice here, right here. I mean, that's good stuff, brother. Allow everyone at the table to shine. I'm telling you that.
Like the biggest,
as a pastor, as a gamer, I mean, what better advice can you give to someone? I mean, I think that's awesome. That's what we're doing right here, right now.
Well, and when you're talking about the modules, the rules, they're not, I don't think that they're, you know, when people complain about there being too many rules in the games, and here I'm going to totally flip on something I said earlier, I don't think it's bad that there's that many rules. I think where it becomes a problem is where someone takes those rules as gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, where that's where the fun seems to
break
down.
Don't misuse the word gospel, because gospel means good news. So don't.
Well, that's true.
When we take those rules as law.
Yes. Yes.
As law. Yes. You're a Lutheran.
I know. Just thinking that when you said it, I was hoping
you
would call me on it.
The Methodist has to school the Lutheran on law? Write it down. Write it down. Lutheran would be heartbroken.
I know. I know.
Oh, you're sleep deprived. Well, aren't we all? Aren't we all?
That's true.
I haven't broken it. Kyle broke him twice.
Man.
Once for the Father, once for the Son. I broke you for the Holy Spirit. So.
Ooh, well done. Mental,
so he might flow through.
Mental note for myself: I'm never never again scheduling an improv practice immediately before a forum, because instead of being like sharp, I'm just white.
No. You have been very sharp. I pick on these guys, Chris. Here's why I pick on Kyle a lot, because Kyle makes fun of me on Facebook. I pick on Chris a little bit, but Chris did a favor for a friend, and I really appreciate him. I'm not going to go into details. But you said something here, and this will go up on Twitter in a little while, but I like to take notes, because to give you guys an idea, I don't take notes like I used to. One of the biggest mistakes I made in college and in seminary was I tried to write down everything that was said, and I remembered none of what was said. So what I try and do now is when I hear a gem, I write down the gems, because they help me bring back recall. And you said, enjoy each other's company because we're shaping something together. So, yes, you're sharp, that. Brother. You're sharp. That's beautiful.
You throw enough stuff on the wall, something will stick. Yeah. Right?
And there,
broken clock is right twice a day.
It went ruined it. I think that you've hit on that. I think that is a beautiful thing that we're doing, and as Christian geeks, we're called to do together. And now I'm about to do the worst thing I could possibly ever do to the both of you is I'm about to open it up to all these folks out here to ask you questions. So I'm out of this one now, folks. You guys get the fun stuff. So raise your hand. I'll call on you. You got to stand up. We're going to ask you to stand up. Just give me your first name.
Adam,
what is your favorite game?
Gosh. You put me on the spot. I thought this was...
Yeah. See, I don't play fair.
We ask the questions.
I'll say...
Hook, line, and sinker.
Like a lot of Quirkle.
I love Quirkle. That's
I haven't played
game.
That one yet.
All right. And who do you have a question for?
Either,
okay, which means both. All right.
I'm coming at you from a. I was not raised in a Christian home, and I came into the church and into my faith in my mid-20s. And sometimes when I encounter things like this, it makes me go, wait, but you're playing games about people who have been possessed by demons that are going to suck blood out of other people and turning them into demons. As people, I'm confused. How is that Christian? You know, like how do you work with those to reconcile? Thank you. And I'm not trying to blame you or anything, but I want to know how to address this because I actually had a situation. I'll tell you my situation. I was playing. I still play with some of the younger guys at our church that I can tell are not into sports and stuff. And so I brought some games to the table, and they've really enjoyed it. And at one point, I played Zombie Dice, which is a really well-done game. And I was playing it not thinking, I can't wait till these children begin exploring the possibility of eating others' brains, but just what an interesting, funny game it was. Well, one kid was really disturbed by the cover of it and said it looked evil and went to his mom, and his mom talked to the pastor, and the pastor talked to me and said, why are you putting games like this in front of our children? And I was like, oh, my gosh, I didn't even know. And honestly, I go back to that whole, I think it's in Timothy that says that if there's a weaker brother there and you're going to offend him by him, then take it away. Take it off the table. Don't eat meat in front of somebody that gets bothered by that kind of thing. So I'm just curious how you guys address this being in this, because you seem very comfortable and liberated, all three of you actually, with reconciling the two. And I just
We're liberated.
Yeah.
Liberated.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. I just tell them they're wrong. No. there is something to be said, right? Like, I mean, if a child looks at that and is disturbed by that, that's an honest experience. And I think that's one that's worth discussing and worth respecting. And that's one of the things, right? Like, we'll play Halo, right? And yep. I'm not going to suggest that every child should play Halo, but I'm not also going to suggest on the same front that every child is going to create a high school shooting because they played Halo. I think... in a lot of the things that we've encountered is that if we can get past some of the other stuff, what does it say? I mean, we can talk about, if we were to talk about something like, I could go back to Harry Potter, and because I've experienced a lot of that, and it's like, well, let's look at the actual story. Let's see what actually is said. So I wrote an article about resurrection and how Harry gets the killing curse onto him, and he kind of dies, goes to King's Cross Landing, and there Dumbledore says, it's because that you have innocent blood that I'm going to return you. And it's like, well, there are some elements of the story that are inside of that. And I think that's what it is. I mean, we can also talk about the Witch at Endor, right, where... wants to summon a seance to get, wisdom from God. And God actually kind of does say, okay, seriously, smarten up. Like, he tells them. The medium, I think, is sometimes questionable depending on who you are. And I think that's where we're talking about the medium, how we address that message. So it's not for everybody. But the message of who God is, he's willing to use whatever it takes to get you to know him. And I think that's where I usually... respect of like, okay, well, yeah, I get it. Like, not every child is going to be interested in zombies. But for the ones that really are, how is God going to speak to them? And I want to address that part. Like, I'll be sensitive that, don't be a brain eater. But You know what I mean? Like, I'll be like, well, what is God trying to say in the midst of this? Because if I truly believe that everybody was created, that God's fingerprint is somewhere in here, how can we find it? And let's just look a little deeper instead of throwing it away instantly. I think we lose a lot when we do that. That's what I would say.
All that time to think. Roll to one. You know, I'll start with something that's easier for me to talk about, and then I'll try to get in there. And you brought it up anyway, so it worked out well. Like you brought up the Halo thing, for example. I love playing Halo. I love it with a passion. I play it all the time. Well, not all the time. When I have time. I have little kids. I don't have much time anymore. You know, come. But, what?
Your wife just called you out.
That is so not true. He waits until
you go to bed.
But do I play it in front of my kids? No. You know, I mean, not only do I not really feel that they are old enough to process something like that, I don't want to waste my time that I could be spending with them doing that.
Ooh.
You know, now I have played Lego Marvel with them, or, you know, Lego Batman. Oh, they love that game. Which has been a lot of fun together. But if I think about, like, the Halo thing, what is it that I enjoy the most? My happiest moments playing that game are when I log in and, ironically, play with a group of other pastors.
I'm from Tennessee. That's not ironic.
And play it for, you know, as we talk. You know, we talk over our headsets. We commiserate about how life is going, how calls are going. And then we work together. And I mean, yeah, okay, so it's a shooting game. Can't pretend it's not. But for me, what I get out of it at the end of the night is I don't find myself going, wow, I'm so glad that I blew up all of those pixels. You know, my happiest moments are where it's like, wow, that was so awesome how Jared did X and DJ did Y and I did Z and together we accomplished this. That was great. I loved it. That was so cool. And frequently when I'm talking, she has to listen to some of it sometimes, if I'm regaling my wife with the awesome stories of my Halo expedition, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's the sort of story that it is. Like, this happened, so-and-so did this, and it was so cool. You know, when it comes to RPGs, yeah, I'm not sure if I can speak as well, because I almost always play a cleric. Yeah, which... That's true.
Both of you guys.
So do I.
I do. I love playing clerics.
I wear a cleric shirt, and I don't play a cleric.
I love playing clerics. There's really? So much fun. Yeah.
I just did the true dungeon and played a cleric. Yeah.
My lord.
They're so versatile. They're great. The survivability. Never mind. I'm going to geek out on you.
No, no. That's okay. That's okay.
But, you know, I think... Part of it, and you know, I think Kyle was going to talk about this too, is kind of getting at what is the. I do think there are some games that are, for lack of a better term, just not really contributing much at all to society.
Agreed.
I'm willing to say that.
I'd agree with that.
I'm not going to sit here and try and list them out because I don't feel competent to do that, but I'm willing to play the odds. You know, there's how many billions of people on this planet, how many, you know, millions of people in this country, how many tens of thousands of people in this convention. The numbers say there's going to be some games that are just not appropriate. But I'm not sure that there are as many as we like to, as we sometimes think. You know, I like the, even that zombie game you're talking about. You know, I don't think the point of that is to teach a kid to go eat a brain. If it is, it's really poorly marketed, actually. Yes. You know, it's way more effective ways, I don't know, but... I mean, it's about that time together, you know? And my hunch is when you were playing that with them, like you said, your goal was not try and train the child to be... I don't even know how to say that with a straight face. Like, you know, you were creating connections with those kids. It was a vehicle. You know, it was a tool towards a certain end. And I'm not sure that we should throw out a tool just because we're not 100% comfortable with it.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
I was going to say, one of the things, like, I've often heard the story, but you're opening a gateway too. there's never a good end to that sentence.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope argument. It's like it's
and I always my response to that is always my God is bigger. Like, oh, I'm gonna read Harry Potter. I'm gonna play, you know, this zombie dice game and be interested in eating people. I can't say this straight face, like... but my God is bigger than that, mm-hmm. and I know that, and so I don't think that me opening a book.
Well, I think that now from his question, I think the child was more disturbed by the artwork, right? It's just practical advice, mm-hmm. as someone who enjoys those things and does mm-hmm. things with kids at the church, games and talk and film. I make sure that I talk with the parents beforehand. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, and so just on a practical level, because I've noticed it, and we had this problem a few years back. Someone didn't like an artist we were having on the panel and shared that with me beforehand because they thought the artist was too revealing in his artwork. Mm-hmm. And I said, this doesn't bother me. It bothered that individual, mm-hmm. and I could not help that because this person is a great person, a wonderful artist, and was wanting to discuss his journey, and I was happy to have him on the panel, but that individual was disturbed by some of the risque clothing. And there are going to be, and we have to respect that mm-hmm. sometimes there are going to be differences of taste. That's what I've had to do. And sometimes it will cause us to say, okay, well, you know, you go do your thing over there. We're going to do our thing over here. And you can't fix them all. Now, I did want to say this about the demon possession stuff. The big thing that we've forgotten in the church is this one beautiful word I learned in 8th grade English. Metaphor. Metaphor. We've forgotten that. So when we read about Harry Potter, when we read and tell these stories, or when there's a game where there's demon possession, there's a reason there is a thing called metaphor. I mean, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Stoker was not interested in talking about this great blood-sucking evil guy. He was telling a metaphor. Mary Shelley was telling a metaphor in Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. And we have forgotten the beauty of metaphor. Jesus spoke in parables and metaphor. And similes.
Missed it by that much.
Missed it. So,
well, you said like that.
No, you were joking.
And I agree. See, you know, I mean, I love both these guys. These guys are great, even though they both play clerics and they both play first-person shooters. I sadly, epilepsy runs in my family, so I could never enjoy first-person shooters. I would get nauseous. But the fact that they play clerics, it's like, wow. Wow.
Since you corrected me on Law and Gospel, I'll point out that you actually would get nauseated.
Yeah.
Because if you were nauseous, you would make us sick.
Oh, okay. There we go.
So both?
There we go. I think your question's a very good.
Solid question.
It's a very
solid question because this is that is something, and we get a similar question to that every year, mm-hmm. and it needs to be answered every year.
And your reference to the weakest member text, I mean, it's valid. It's totally valid, and there's truth to that. And at the same time, and part of it is the tradition I come out of, I am always leery of proof texting. I'm a strong proponent of beginning with the text and going from there into life, as opposed to trying to seek out pieces to help me prove my point. And I'm not saying you were doing that, but it's someone else doing that to you, for example. I've always like, I just don't feel like that's how it works.
Yeah.
Like to me, God speaks and we listen. And so, you know, I look to the scripture, I look there for the inspiration to apply then into my life in that order.
All right.
Or at least I try to.
We've got a little time for a few more questions before we end
Captain
our
America. We have to do Captain.
Yes. Something.
Young Captain America. Yes. All right.
No, we cannot lift Thor's hammer.
My name really isn't Steve Rogers. Yeah. I have a question for Chris, because in my civilian life, I live in, you were saying you live in a very unchurched area. Mm-hmm. I come from the Silicon Valley.
Mm.
In my life.
Yep.
How practical, I need advice. Do you talk to somebody who is dead set against the church, who... Our big thing is everybody thinks they are so smart. I come from a place where everybody accomplishes everything on their own, and they don't need God. They can handle this, and how do I say this? It's not like they are actively against me. It's like they tune me out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's good. That works for you, but
I'm good.
What do you do to open up people like that?
I know it sounds simplistic. I'm a big fan of example. You know, whether in smaller ways or bigger ways, during the shooting of Attacking the Darkness, you know, one of the cast members made a reference to me. She made a comment to me about halfway through the shoot about, and she, I'm pretty sure, is an atheist, if not agnostic. But she made numerous references to me as the shoot progressed about my persona and how I conducted myself. And just that many of the things that she'd always been so cynical about when it came to the church or to Christians in general, at the risk of sounding like I'm trying to toot my own horn, that she didn't find in the way that I acted with her or with others. And, you know, I guess part of it is also is what is our... For me, you kind of hinted at this, actually. You're not hinted, you said it earlier. One of you said it. No, you did. It was Kyle. And again, this is part of the tradition I'm coming out of. I don't believe that I ever have or ever will save anyone.
That's right.
I believe strongly that that's up to Christ. I mean, that's not my job.
That's right.
I point. I'm a over there. You know, like, that's my job, traffic control. Like, that away. And as such... And I also agree with the "my God is bigger" thing. You know, that for me, a lot of it is I try very hard to present myself in a way that is authentically Christian, authentic to how I see that being in my faith. And I try not to worry too much about the timeline. You know what I mean? That, because it's hard. It's really hard. You know, the congregation I serve, not big. I was called in after it went through a precipitous collapse. You know, in 2001, it had 281 on a Sunday. Pastor retires. 2005, it had 138 on a Sunday. 2010, it had 62 on a Sunday. 2011, pastor is asked to leave. 2012, I come in. We've been pretty stable since then in the low mid-50s. We're in the midst of selling our site, selling our building, with the intention of using that money to buy ourselves a place that is more suited to our size so that we can be more effective ministers in our community. Because what we've come to realize is for us, the building that we own has become, it's owning us, to be kind of cliche about it, but it is. How it connects to your question is that we as a community have been trying very hard to get out of ourselves and really focus on our community and how we can be visibly present without... There's always going to be a little agenda. I can't pretend there won't be. You know, we can say do it without an agenda, but let's be honest, it's always there in the back of our minds. But I try not to make it the first thing or the primary, if that makes sense. My goal is just to love the people of my congregation and of the surrounding community for the simple fact that they are part of God's creation. And my hope is that if I can do that authentically and teach them to do that authentically, that slowly but surely we will see the growth that I do think we're capable of. And the weird thing is, the more that we've gotten into this, the more that's what I'm hearing from people. We're now, and I can say this today because the insurance finally went through, we're about to start hosting a small encampment of homeless people at the congregation on some of the grass. And it's been amazing the response of, we have like 30 groups that operate out of our church. And so I had to tell all of these groups about this. And time after time, I was really not excited about this conversation because I was expecting blowback, frankly. And instead, the thing I kept hearing from people, many of whom I know have no church background, was, that is so awesome. I am so glad you guys are doing that. That's exactly what I picture Christians should do, you know, to be present like that, to be welcoming like that. And you know, again, it's not meaning that our numbers are doubling, but it does feel like our presence in the community is changing. And my hope would be that that will lead to some changes numerically. And at the same time, if it doesn't, I think it's still making some pretty cool, you know, ripples.
I often think about, like the in the four Gospels, they have, like, in the Last Supper, John says something different than what the other three emphasize. The other three emphasize the communion. And John, he says
the foot washing.
He grabs a towel, wraps him with a towel, and washes the disciples' feet. And they're like, stop it, seriously. And he's like, no, this is really important. And I think that's it, too. Like, in a situation where people don't need God, they don't feel like they do. And I don't think you can convince them otherwise. But you can serve. I don't know what it's like in Silicon Valley, but in Canada, we have snow. And if you shovel the guy's walk for, like, every day for a winter, at the end of the winter, he's going to wonder why. He's going to ask why. In geek ministry, like what we do, that's kind of the same thing. Like, well, what do they need? They need some people that are willing to sing songs for them. And then they ask, well, why? They need people to listen to their passion. And I sit there and listen. And then they ask, why? Or what are you passionate about? And I think in the same way, serve. Love, serve.
You know the sower, the seeds parable, right? And I assume everybody knows that parable? Is that okay? And you probably know this too, but if you stop and think about it, it's really important. That sower is not—it's not like some guy going to his backyard or some, you know, woman going in the backyard and putting the hole and putting the seed and covering it up and doing the next one and watering it and all of that. It's just flinging it everywhere. Let's throw as many seeds as we can. I think that's actually a really important part of the image. That, you know, we don't just focus on, I'm going to convince this person to accept Jesus Christ as a personal Lord and Savior. I'm not saying you're doing that, Captain. I promise. instead, it's all about just being. You know, God's the one who's going to act.
I think that's really good. Got time for maybe one more question, and and more hands jump up. Jump up. Roll for initiative. Let's see here.
The answer is 42.
We'll have someone.
That's your job. Yeah, what is the meaning of life?
The answer is 42. Okay. Here's what we'll do. Who drove the? Raise your hand if you had a question. I'm going to try and do this as fair as possible. We'll start in the back. How far did you come to Gen Con? Half an hour.
Your head's going down.
How far?
Denver.
Okay.
New York.
New York's got you beat.
I've driven that drive. I know that's Houston, long. Texas. I'm not sure the measurements there.
Oh, Houston and New York. I think Houston's a little bit further.
Just 4 hours.
He put it. Okay. So we'll get one from Houston, Texas. We'll take Houston, Texas.
No pressure, right?
Yeah.
What's your favorite color?
Blue. No, yellow.
So I was wondering, there's the gaming community is kind of like a smaller community, a smaller subset of society, right? And then the Christian gaming community is a really small subset of that. And so what I was wondering is, like, you have these games. It sounds like in general the panel plays games and finds a Christian message somewhere in that game somewhere, or just the community of playing games together is the love part. But are there any games out there in the world that I don't know about that are truly like Christian-made games or Christianity-based games that are great?
Maybe just that are great?
Right?
Yeah.
Because isn't it automatically? Yes, that's the problem I'm having. Is
Christian's a terrible adjective. Usually means mediocre.
we've had that question before, and
wasn't someone just talking about one last year?
Me.
Yeah, Mike was.
I can add that one again, and there's a couple others that have cropped up.
Yeah, I'll just say my biggest problem with that,
uh-huh.
because this question came up 8 years ago, 2007, when we did our first panel, when I was at the first panel on faith and gaming. We had a gentleman on there by the name of Gary Gygax, some of you may know. And we began to talk about that, and I'll say now what I said 8 years ago. I said the problem isn't we need more Christian games. We need more game designers who are Christians. Because, you know, when I hear the term Christian art, I think of Thomas Kincaid. I don't think of Reuben, and that makes me mad. When I hear Christian art, I think of white Jesus in a southern church with a rebel flag on one side and an American flag on the other side. I don't think of Renoir or Monet, and that makes me sad. So, to me, if we're a Christian, our games will reflect that. So there are good games out there. Resource management games. Right next to the booth this year, we have a company called Peaceable Kingdom. Now, I don't know if they meant that or not, but you think about that. Peaceable Kingdom and all of their games are about cooperative play.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We're going over
that. What was the one with the woozle, Mike?
Feed the Woozle?
Feed the Woozle. I mean, games for all ages. So if you say, you know, what are the good Christian games out there? I would say that Chris and Kyle, I'm sorry, to me, K sounds for me, but Chris and Kyle have both emphasized, I mean, it's cooperative play. Mm-hmm. So a Christian game is about cooperative play. Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
Dead of
Dead
Winter.
Of Winter, yeah.
Most of the time, the zombies win.
Yeah, yes, they do.
I've killed in Dead of Winter many a time. We've all died.
Working together to be killed.
Okay, yeah, pandemic. All right, let's do this really quick. Let's start here. Let's talk about cooperative games. Raise your hand. I'm just going to go back. Raise a hand. Tell me a cooperative game if you've got one on this side. Okay, pandemic.
Forbidden Island.
We're going to start over here. Nathan?
Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Sentinels of the Multiverse is awesome.
What's that? Is it Nomish Submarine or?
I don't know that.
Red November.
Red November, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Red November. Yes, ma'am.
Kids game Hoot Owl Hoot.
Okay.
I got one.
Yeah. Space.
Space Alert's great.
I haven't played that one. I'm learning new games. My wife's going to be mad. Space Alert.
Yeah, exactly.
Castle Panic, yeah.
Classic,
yeah.
Pathfinder Adventure Card Game, great one. There yes.
Shadows over Camelot.
Betrayer.
And what was yours, Scott?
Agents of Smersh. Yes.
Agents of Smersh.
Does anyone know that one?
Oh, yeah.
Great Kickstarter.
See, that's the Christian game, because Christianity, unlike we sometimes practice it in the church, is about cooperation, about working well and playing well with others.
Now, if you heard that hard edit, don't worry, you're not missing anything. After that, we just talked about stuff that's going on the rest of the con, stuff that, you know, you probably either were at the con and saw it, or you weren't there, and I don't have any audio or video to show you guys of what they were talking about. So rather than spoil everything in this amazing recording with, you know, pitches to things that you can't see, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you guys a little treat. See, before things got rolling, I set up my recorder and I hit record before the panel actually got started, and I got a couple absolute gems. I could set them up, but that would only ruin the joy that you're about to experience. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Odie, Kyle Rudge, and my man Derek White, because no, Derek, I'm not gonna take anything away from this. Enjoy.
So who's your bag holder?
Who?
Yeah. Oh, my wife. Okay.
You?
My bag holder?
Yeah.
Just a friend.
My wife's at home. Some say she's just a friend.
Just a friend. My wife's at home with a three-four-day-old.
Hey, dude, man, I found this band out there doing, I was almost going to be late. They were doing Bon Jovi cover songs. Then they started doing some Iggy Azalea.
You got what I need.
Oh, wow.
Just a friend.
I like you.
I've never been happier than I pushed record already.
You serious? Thank you so much.
Do we take requests? I'd love some ABBA.
Actually, I do.
Maybe
a pretty good. What is it?
Smoke on the water.
Tag team back again. Check it. Direct it. Let's begin. Party on, party people. Let me hear some noise. DC's in the house. Jump, jump, rejoice. There's a party over here. A party over there. Wave your hands in the air. Shake your derriere. These three words, if you're getting busy. Whoomp, there it is. Which are four words.
Yeah.
Hit that's me. True. Whoomp, there it is. Whoomp, there it is.
That's very profound. True. Yeah. That is profound.
That is why we bring you on this panel.
Yeah. I could do a really bad Baby Got Back.
But I say I could do really like, all right, stop.
Gangsta's Paradise.
Collaborate and listen.
Nice back with brand new inventions.
Something. Grab a hold of me tightly. Will it ever...
Let us just say that the rap I was exposed to when I was younger consisted of these words, two live crew. So I will not begin doing any freestyling for you.
There you go.
Because Mike Perna would not censor it out on his podcast.